Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is March 25th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last week. I believe we're in the Gospel of John, and we are in chapter 9. So, Gospel of John, chapter 9, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 9. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth, and his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had thus spoken, he spat on the ground, and made clay of the spittle, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay, and said unto him, Go, wash in the pool of Siloam, which is by interpretation sent. He went his way therefore, and washed, and came seeing. The neighbors therefore, and they which before had seen him that he was blind, said, Is not this he that sat and begged? Some said, This is he. Others said, He is like him. But he said, I am he. Therefore said they unto him, How were thine eyes opened? He answered and said, A man that is called Jesus made clay, and anointed mine eyes, and said unto me, Go to the pool of Siloam, and wash. And I went and washed, and I received sight. Then said they unto him, Where is he? He said, I know not. They brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind. And it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then again the Pharisees also asked him how he had received his sight. He said unto them, He put clay upon mine eyes, and I washed, and do see. Therefore said some of the Pharisees, This man is not of God, because he keepeth not the Sabbath day. Others said, How can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? And there was a division among them. They say unto the blind man again, What sayest thou of him that he hath opened thine eyes? He said, He is a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him, that he had been blind and received his sight, until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, Is this your son, who ye say was born blind? How then doth he now see? His parents answered them and said, We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now seeth, we know not, or who hath opened his eyes, we know not. He is of age, ask him, he shall speak for himself. These words spake his parents, because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess that he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore said his parents, He is of age, ask him. Then again called they the man that was blind, and said unto him, Give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner. He answered and said, Whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. One thing I know, that whereas I was blind, now I see. Then said they to him again, What did he to thee? How opened he thine eyes? He answered them, I have told you already, and ye did not hear. Wherefore would ye hear it again? Will ye also be his disciples? Then they reviled him and said, Thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spake unto Moses. As for this fellow, we know not from whence he is. The man answered and said unto them, Why, herein is a marvelous thing, that ye know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened mine eyes. Now we know that God heareth not sinners. But if any man be a worshipper of God, and doeth his will, him he heareth. Since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. They answered and said unto him, Thou wast altogether born in sins, and dost thou teach us? And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, Dost thou believe on the Son of God? He answered and said, Who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? And Jesus said unto him, Thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. And Jesus said, For judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words, and said unto him, Are we blind also? Jesus said unto them, If ye were blind, ye should have no sin. But now ye say, We see, therefore your sin remaineth.
Okay, we'd like to remind everyone before we get started, by joining our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You can find that on a blue bar under sheriffs, and just click on the tab that says join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs and follow the instructions and information. It's extremely important, of course, that we have constitutional sheriffs. A lot of sheriffs that may not be constitutional, a lot of sheriffs that may even be Democrats, and they may not understand what's going on, and they believe what they're being told and what they've been taught, just like the rest of us, until we came to understand the truth. So a lot of these people that, again, may not be doing their job properly, if we can train them, if we can teach them, if we can share with them the truth, then it could be a whole different story. So we want to be very careful as we approach our sheriffs. And again, if they're Democrats, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. The great problem really is on the higher level, the leadership of the Democratic Party. And a lot of people blindly follow, unfortunately, because they don't get too involved with politics, maybe, and either claim to be a Republican or a Democrat and so on.
John, quick note, you're not in Q&A. I yield.
Thank you. We should have Sheriff Dar unmuted, though, I'm pretty sure. Double check if you could. I know I unmuted him, so he should be able to talk. All right, anyway, before we get started, we're going to go straight into Sheriff Dar, but I do want to share something for about 10 minutes or so. It's an extremely important situation. It's really a special announcement. As everybody knows, today we have Sheriff Dar Leaf from Barry County, Michigan. And we'll be handing the mic over to him maybe in about 10 minutes. But again, before
media company owns through social wisdom.
Someone's got a mic open there. I would like to talk about a potential serious problem, and it's concerning potential EMP attacks, but mostly it's for solar flares. The sun will be reaching its peak of current activity cycle in 2024, 1 year earlier than previously estimated. And it's anticipated that the poles are going to change, and that's going to cause a lot of sunspots. We already experienced something. Matter of fact, we had a very serious sunspot hit us just recently. According to the experts at NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center, eruptions on the sun's surface and sunspots are expected to multiply and intensify through this year as the yellow sun enters its most active period in two decades. So I'd like to play a two-minute clip. This is something that just came upon us over the weekend, and I think it was totally unexpected if I understand things. But let me play this clip. It's about a minute and a half, 2 minutes long.
Good afternoon, folks. The coronal mass ejection struck a few hours ago, half a day earlier than expected. The burst from the X-class solar flare, we knew it was coming. We knew to expect geomagnetic storms, but the severity of the impact was considerably more than most forecasters expected. If you recall, the most likely range of geomagnetic storm conditions was KP 5 to 6, a level 1 or 2 storm. There was a real chance of a higher power event, almost 50%, and indeed, that is what we got. On the heels of the corona whole stream we began taking this morning, the speed of the CME impact at 800 kilometers per second. Luckily, the density was only modest. Nevertheless, the KP index hit 8, a severe geomagnetic event. If the density of the CME had been higher, we may have hit KP9, and then we'd really be rocking and rolling. The penetrating electric fields lit up the geoelectric like crazy for a while. We hit moderate to strong induction surging in the United States and Canada. The ground magnetic perturbations were also very strong, but luckily, those were largely isolated to the polar region. When the impact occurred, there was also a surge in ionospheric neutral density and a dropout of frequency usage capacity. At this point, there are already several small networks having issues. I will be monitoring various vectors throughout the rest of the evening and tomorrow. The technological risk will exist for 48 hours after the geomagnetic storm subsides. There's already a bit of a dropout in the storm power, but reverberations are possible for the next day and a half. For now, I'm glad it was only a moderate density event, that minor network issues are all we've had so far, and that the solar flaring has now dropped below the M-class range. I will see you in the morning for the daily show. Be safe, everyone.
Okay, like I said,
today's video is all...
This particular situation just hit us by surprise over the weekend. It came through on Sunday, and it's still affecting us right now, and we'll be doing so throughout the evening. But this could be a major problem. I'd like to share one other clip, and then we'll get on with our program. It's about 6 minutes long, and it's on our page. I'm going to be playing just a couple of minutes of the video here on our page. That is, let's see, you'll find it if you look on the right-hand side of our website. You can find this page. It says Solar Flare EMP Protection. Okay, and I strongly suggest that people take a look at this page and read through all of this information and watch the videos. Most of these videos are short, but this last video down here is really on a group of people that were that President Trump actually set forth an executive order to get someone to come up with a program to secure our grid. Up until 2017, our grid was exposed. In 2017, one of the first things President Trump did was, again, put this executive order out there. And this particular company actually worked out the problem, and it was tested by our military. Our military is using this system at this moment in time. Our grid is now protected, at least the main part of our grid. I think a lot of the off legs still haven't been protected yet, so they can go down and we could be without power for months, maybe 6 months, as long as 6 months. We're going to hear a little bit about that in this six-minute clip. But in any event, I do know that these legs are supposed to be preparing. The video that you're going to listen to was recorded in 2019, and so that's almost 5 years ago, or about 5 years ago. And so since then, I think the entire grid has already been protected. Now, the electric companies was notify the people of this problem because their homes are not protected. And if we do get hit with a solar flare or an EMP, which is just as bad, and if your home is not protected, everything in your home, electronics, electric, everything will fry. It will cause fires also. So your home would be completely damaged, your computers, your televisions, all your electronics would be gone. So it's extremely important people to be aware of this and should take some kind of precaution. This particular EMP protector, I think it's called, is available pretty cheap. I think it was like $350, and if you go through us, you can get it for $300. So we kind of tied in on that because we believe it's a very important thing that people should know about. Now, this problem that we have here, again, I know with my home, as soon as I heard about this, I was looking to do a Faraday cage. But anyways, as soon as I heard about this, I definitely connected up and I put one in my car. Your car will fry too. You'll put one in my car, one in my generator, and one in my home. So again, let me play this six-minute clip. I think it's extremely important people realize and take precaution of some type, and then we'll get on with our regular program for the night.
And so for a home that has the EMP shield on it, there's a very low likelihood of fire breaking out is what I'm hearing you say.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Just out of curiosity, I'm just thinking about how my own house is set up here. I guess it's a reduction transformer right outside my house, you know, located there. Would it cause that to blow up or explode, or what do you think?
Well, so it depends on the distance, and something we kind of addressed a little earlier, but I'll touch on just a little bit more in detail, is the EMP shield. We talked about 250 linear feet of protection. It actually is in both directions.
Okay.
So, because remember, we're talking about the induction and the current coming from all directions, you know, induction through the structure of your house and also from the grid into your house.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually protecting 250 linear feet into your house and also outside of your house. So if there is things within 250 feet, they will be protected up to a certain point, and that's where I need Tim to kind of speak on the engineering side of that. But the lines outside the house are also protected.
Interesting.
We have designed a custom unit for power companies that we are working with several power co-ops, that the power company is actually going to be offering the unit to their customers. It will plug into the meter base, and then their meter base will plug into our unit. And it is a unit that the power companies will actually be offering to their customers for $5 a month or $7.50 a month. That it is a unit that will be, that is being provided by a power company.
Very cool. So yeah. I got a question from David Knox, and he's got lots of good questions this time. He says, what is the real truth about how long the grid would be down due to a CME or EMP due to a nuclear strike?
Wow. That's a tough one. Go ahead, Tim. I'll kind of talk quickly, actually. So I think it's a matter of opinion. It depends on what's destroyed, what level of impact the grid actually takes, and what process we are right now.
There's a lot of factors.
There's so many variables. Yeah.
Geography, where it goes off, what the magnetic field is, how high up in the atmosphere, you know, all those kinds of things.
Right.
But let's just assume that it was positioned well enough to knock down all the, you know, all the very large transformers, power transformers in the States. What time frame are we looking at there?
Tim?
I would say you're looking at least 6 months.
Okay, and that's a short estimate, I'd say. I mean, and I from what the research that I did on it was that there, some people were talking 3 to 5 years. Now I have also heard recently that there has been some efforts to start to have additional units that they can, like, they're not really the full large size transformers, but they're smaller ones that they can daisy chain together in crises and stuff like that. Have you guys heard anything about that?
We have a different type of president than we've had in the past. We have a president that has put things in action 2 years ago that should have been put in action many years ago. That is, national security, infrastructure is national security. It may not be down to the power company level, but to the main infrastructure of the company or of a country. Don't think nothing has been being done in the last couple of years. There's more things that's going on.
I've been privy to some of those conversations too. There are a lot of things that are happening behind the scenes that aren't necessarily public knowledge, because you don't really want everybody to know about all what you're doing for your defenses and those kinds of things.
When you look at the executive order that came out, it talks about power being down for 6 months.
Yeah.
That's realistic. Be prepared to be without power for 6 months.
All right. Very good. Somebody wrote another comment. They were just being silly, I guess. Okay, so I don't know if I have any other questions. I think you guys have done a pretty good job of answering everything. let me see here. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to cover before we finished up? I'm just trying to check through the chat and see if I missed any big questions here.
Well, not trying to fill EMP shields, but one of the things about having an EMP shield, in the event of a nuclear EMP, your companies are not going to be out manufacturing additional equipment, refrigerators, TVs, computers, hardware that you're going to be wanting during that time. And when the grid starts coming back up, what you have is what you're going to have for a while. If it doesn't work, you didn't have an EMP shield, it's not going to work, you're not going to be able to get things for quite some time. So it is a really inexpensive insurance policy to protect what you have in the event of an EMP, and when things come back up, you'll still be able to have things to operate with.
Yeah, you're going to be miles ahead of everybody else, that's for sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
If you can afford a generator, especially if you can afford solar, in the event of EMP, you can afford and have some solar backup, because a generator is great, but where are you going to be able to get fuel and be able to get it to you? Solar is great. Wind is great. Thinking like...
Okay, I'm not going to play much more. That video is about an hour long. I suggest people would want to listen to that entire video, get all the information that these people are sharing. Again, this video was recorded back in 2019. He's referring, of course, to President Trump. 2 years earlier was 2017 when he entered office. And Trump, again, to move to protect our grid and also our satellites and... our satellites, at least all the new ones going up since at least 2017 or 18, they've all been protected. I don't know if you heard about, there was about 20 satellites lost about a year or two ago, and when Musk had put them up 20 at a time, but then before they had time to enter into their regular orbit, they were unable to be put to sleep and were hit by a solar flare at the time. It wasn't anything big, but it was one that didn't really do much damage, but it did do damages to any kind of a satellite that wasn't protected. So, again, he lost 20 of them at that point in time, and this is something that's extremely important that we're aware of and that we protect ourselves, that we'll be able to have the communications that we need and so on. Okay, with that... we're going to move over to tonight's program, and we have Sheriff Dar with us today. Sheriff Dar is with Barry County from Michigan. He's the sheriff of Barry County, and I believe he's unmuted. I'm going to pass the mic over to him, and after that, we'll ask some questions or have a conversation. But Sheriff Dar, are you unmuted? Can you hear us?
Well, can you hear me? I'm hearing you just fine.
We got you. You got the mic.
Yeah, you just dated yourself by the music at the beginning, by the way, Supertramp.
great group.
Yeah. Anyways, I got the mic. What am I supposed to be doing here now? I had a list of questions I read through. I didn't bring them with me tonight, so you guys are going to have to help me out with those, if you would, please.
All right. Do you want me to just go through the questions? I don't know if you have anything particularly you want to say before we start answering these questions.
Just keep plugging away. We're getting more and more sheriffs. I'm hearing the sheriff down in Georgia right now that's interested in start listening to this common law. And the if I could get him one of those books, Governed by Consent, that'd be nice to get it down there.
But that's why
it's Forsyth County in Georgia.
Right, it's extremely important that all of our people, everybody that's listening in, to get their sheriffs educated. But if you can send me an email or something on the information, and I'll get a book out to that sheriff.
Yeah, we can make that happen, John. I'm down here, and I'm not too far from Forsyth.
Okay. All right, let me start off with some questions here. For at least the last 70 years, civics and the Constitution has not been taught in schools. Those who have awakened to our loss of liberties and are now learning to combat these tyrants, when and how did you awaken to these problems?
reality, when I first took the office of the sheriff, I knew it was something more than just another police chief's job. So I started studying the office of the sheriff and run into an attorney by the name of Carson Tucker. And Carson Tucker did a presentation at the Michigan Sheriff's Association talking about the office of the sheriff. And what he did is he basically validated what I thought was right. So I befriended him for quite a while and started studying through some of the stuff that he brought up. And then I don't remember how I got into Brent Allen Winters. Brent Winters was probably a godsend for me there. Reading some of his books. I can't remember if I met you guys first or if it was Brent Winters I met first, but somewhere down the line, I was kind of blessed with reading Brent's materials, and now I'm doing some programs with him online, and boy, really enjoying them. We're getting pretty good feedback on them. So that's basically it in a nutshell. I just knew it was something more than a police chief's job, and I had no idea that it amounted to all of what I'm learning today. Because it's still, this is my fifth term, and I'm still learning.
Yeah, I think we're all still learning. You know, we've been at this for quite some time. We met Brent Winters a few years back, and for those people interested, this is a book that really helped me a lot to understand the common law, particularly the history of the common law, which is extremely important. And so he wrote a book called The Excellence of the Common Law, and it's by Brent Winters. So you can get that on Amazon, or you can go to Common Lawyers. CommonLawyer.com, I think that's his website. Isn't that his website, Eric? CommonLawyer.com?
That is correct.
Yeah. So you can go to his website, and I think he'll have a link up there. He's got a lot of courses going on. He's doing a militia course right now. Anybody interested in getting into the militia course, you can send your information to us. We'll get it over to him, and they'll make contact with you, and you can get into the course. I think they're on the sixth week. I don't know how many weeks it's going to go, but he's got quite a few courses that he's got recorded. Did you want to say anything about that?
This is a 12-week course. We've been doing these courses together, and the first one we did was just the Office of Sheriff, and he would talk about it at the common law, and I would explain what it looked like today, and that seemed to work out really, really well, so we kept doing this, and most everything that he talks about, like we did on common law trusts. Well, we deal with trusts once in a while in the sheriff's office, and sometimes you get some disputes over these trusts. Then we did one on the common law grand jury. Then we did the four boxes of freedom. I'm hoping everybody listening knows what those are. Then there was the big one, the long one we did was the Magna Carta.
Yeah, that was a long course.
Yeah, I see the name popping up every now and then, so that's good to see.
Yeah, I try to make them all. Well, I think I only missed a couple on the Magna Carta one. All right, what do you suggest is the best way to approach a sheriff?
You know, that's a tough one because I just had that natural curiosity in me. And because the sheriff is elected, and that was the big draw to my curiosity on that. The sheriff is elected, so he represents the people. He's a direct, I call him a direct descendant of the people, but he gets his power directly from them, where all your other law enforcement tend to be more like bureaucrats. And so if you can get the sheriff to understand his role on that, as that elected office. In reality, it's not just the sheriff. It's every elected office out there. They just don't understand their role because they've been bullied around by big government for so long. And they tend to bow, take a knee, whatever you want to call it. It's very frustrating for me. So if you can get that sheriff to understand that proper role of being a sheriff, the problem you're going to come across is we have this conveyor belt of law enforcement. It's just like how they teach in our schools. It's a conveyor belt. Here's your English. Here's your math. Here's your... whatever class, you know, and then so it's law enforcement. Here's your motor vehicle code. Here's your Here's how you handle a domestic. Here's what the courts are saying on search and seizure. So they just move us right along this conveyor belt over and over and over again, but they don't teach what do you do when your government's bad. They teach us how to handle a domestic. They teach us how to handle a murder. They teach some fraud cases, rape cases. They make us better drivers. They teach us use of force, which is acceptable, what's not. But they don't teach when government's naughty. So we have to remind these sheriffs that you are part of that check and balance. Your job isn't to get along with the state police. Your job isn't to get along with the FBI. Your job is to make sure that not just the FBI, but even your own office is not violating people's rights. And if you can get them hooked into their curiosity on that, I think you can reel them in, but you're going to have a hard time because most of them went through that conveyor belt, the college training. They don't teach us on the Constitution. They teach us what the Supreme Court was ruling on cases. So it's a difficult.
And that's why it's so important to really educate your sheriff. And the best way to do it, again, we wrote a book for that purpose. It's called Government by Consent. We have a lot of information in there on the sheriff. And I just put it up on the desktop here right now. We talk about government by consent. We teach the law, the American history, grand jury and the petit jury, then the history of the sheriff. We've got quite a long chapter on the history of the sheriff, the duty of the sheriff, and so on. We've got a chapter on courts, introduction to the founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America, Article 1, Article 2, Article 3, all the way up to the amendments. And then we get into the most how important the committee man is. People need to create committees of safety within their counties. And we also have a chapter on the militia. And we have quite a few memorandums of law, 30 of them altogether, which really gives the people a real good understanding of the common law and the Constitution itself. We also have a plan to save the Republic in this book, and then we get into the last chapters on the Committee of Safety. So educating the sheriff is the key. Now, are you...
If we could get this training into, like, the Michigan Sheriff's Association and the state associations all across the country, then get some more stuff at the national. If we could get our foot in the door there, that'd be extremely helpful.
Absolutely. And you know, by the way, we have numerous courses for those because we've got a lot of new people in here tonight. We got a lot of courses, so underneath our educational tab, you can take a look at that. But we also have a court access and a common law course. And for anybody who signs up that's a sheriff, as far as a membership here on our website, if they come in and they're a sheriff or a deputy, we'll let them into that course for free. This is the only course we will charge for. We do have two courses that we ask people to be premium members of in order to get those two courses, which is a premium member is someone that's giving $5 a month or more supporting us. But anybody who can't afford it, they can't afford the $5, and unfortunately there are people that can't afford that $5 a month. We'll let them in for free. Okay.
Can I interrupt real quick? Here's an example of the problems you're going to have. A few years ago, the Michigan Association of Chiefs of Police, they had this training coming on out, and it was, the city was getting burned down because he had two white officers wrestling with a black man. Black man pulled a pistol out of his pocket. One of the officers shot him. And that caused a stir. So next thing you know, the old routine where they get the old flash mobs that go on and burn down the city. Well, they had the captain. Well, he was the chief now, but he was the captain back then who was handling all that. He's coming and giving us tips of what they did that worked very, very well, things that really hurt them really, really bad. So anyway, I put in for that training with my undersheriff, and the Michigan Association Chiefs of Police, they called me up, and they say, hey, you guys join us. You can get that class for half off. It'll pay for your membership and the class. And I said, okay. So we fill out the application, send our $100 in, And then about 2 weeks later, I get another phone call. Oh, hey, you have to have a sponsor police chief to get you in. I said, okay. So we got police chief sponsored us. About a month later, I got this letter from him. And at first, I thought it was a joke, declining my application. And it says, they'll respect your opinions on a constitutional sheriff. Not all of us agreed, and for that reason, your application is going to be denied. So, just to give you a paint a picture of what it's like for these police chiefs who think that the sheriff isn't a higher-ranking person in there, that the sheriff, you know, he's supposed to be your chief law enforcement officer and chief conservator of your peace for your county. That includes the cities. They're in your county. They vote for you, too. And so, I tell you that story because that was kind of offensive to me, that the chiefs of police just did not understand the Constitution, and here they are, there are leaders. I can yield on that.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. And again, that's why it's so important that we gather together with committees of safety and work with our sheriffs, support our sheriffs, and make sure we get a good sheriff into the office. Okay, are you
Hey, John?
Yep.
John, can you turn your mic up? Dar is blasting me, and I can't hardly hear you. I don't know if anybody else is having problems. You seem very low, and Dar is just blowing my speakers up. So,
yeah. I don't know that I can. Tell me if I'm getting louder and louder. I think that's just my volume coming in.
I don't know. You seem to be low. I have trouble hearing you.
Anybody else having trouble hearing me?
I can hear you pretty good. I can hear, and Dar's not too loud, but you are a little lower than normal. Can you get closer?
No, I got a headset on. If I can get any closer, I can change mics if you want.
You sound pretty good to me. I don't know.
All right, well, let's see if we can continue. I'll talk a little louder. Okay, we understand that you might be organizing other like-minded constitutional sheriffs, and if so, how many are on board at this point in time?
Oh, that's a revolving door, because every 4 years you get a new sheriff. So yeah. You get one in there, and usually it's a sheriff that's not just starting out, because he's kind of testing those waters. He wants to get reelected, and so you're going to get somebody who's got more years in, so you might only get him for the last 2 years of their last term. And a lot of them won't jump on board when they know they got another election coming up because they're worried about getting voted out of office.
Well, therein,
so I don't have a number for you.
All right. Well, therein is the importance of people getting together in their counties, exercising their unalienable right of government by consent, and supporting your sheriff, getting a good sheriff in office, and when you get a good sheriff in office, keep them there. So it's up to the people. If the people want to be free, they have to get involved. They have to give some time. Liberty, freedom is not for free. Okay, next question. Do you have a list of sheriffs in Michigan that are constitutional or any other place or any other states? And if so, can you give NLA a list of these sheriffs, particularly the name, state, and county, where we'll endeavor to get committees of safety in their counties. We'll focus in on those counties to support them and hopefully connect them stronger county to county by the people themselves. So anything you can give us on that.
Right now is the time to strike the iron because it's hot, because you just had that sheriff from Butler County, Ohio, who did that press release where he was talking about his experience listening to the FBI director and at the National Sheriff's Conference in D.C. And it was funny because he was loud and clear that the president wouldn't come see him, the vice president wouldn't come see him, so they had the director of the FBI come out. And he said that, first of all, the FBI director admitted that there's hacking going in our elections, which I thought was kind of funny because where's the investigation? Then he says that they're not only going to hack at our federal, but they're going to go all the way down to our local elections and start hacking into those. I took that as a shot across the bow towards sheriffs that either you go along to get along or we're going to get you out of office with this hacking. Then he says that there's more red flags now than what they were before 9/11. That opened a lot of sheriffs' eyes. So right now is the time to go on out and start talking about committees of safety with the sheriffs. Right now is the time to, we were looking at going township to township and getting the township supervisors involved. And because that's, you go look back at the history of like militias and sheriffs and all that, they started out in towns of tens and then they went to 100s. And there was 100 families in that area. And so they had their township supervisors. That's basically how these townships all started. And the township supervisor was supposed to be kind of recruiting for the militia duties. And then, of course, as the population grew more and more, and like civics has gone away, so that's kind of gone on the wayside. But right now is the time to go after that. And you will look at the 15 million illegal aliens that are in our country right now. And I'm here to tell you that it wasn't just Venezuela. I'll bet you every country between Brazil and the United States emptied their prisons on out and sent them on up to the United States. I can guarantee that happened. And maybe not all of them went all the way up here. I don't know. But a good share of them are here in this country. And we even had our governor here who asked the Michiganders over here to open up their homes to help out these, what she calls them, new Americans. So, you know, what could go wrong there? You know, you got military-age men, they're giving them $5,000 cash card and a cell phone. What's the cell phone going to be used for? Sounds like a communication device to me to tell them to do whatever act. I was very suspicious of them doing those with the Obama phones to drop those people that are going to go and burn down a town like Minneapolis. You know, how do they all communicate? It wasn't all on just on the internet. And what did they do? They gave out a whole bunch of Obama phones there. So now we got kind of the same scenario, but this time it's people from all over the world and a lot of countries that don't like us. So right now is the time to go after those sheriffs and say, hey, we want to start these committees of safety. We're there for you. Kind of pick a leader, introduce them to him. And he might assign somebody as a liaison.
All right. Okay, let's see where we're at here. Oh, that national meeting that you went to, is that something that's annual out there in Washington or just occasional, or was this an emergency call? Or how did that come about, that meeting in Washington? We heard about it.
Oh, that's a net. Excuse me? Oh, are you still there?
Yeah. And
oh, okay. That's the National Sheriff's Association, and they do two meetings a year. And what it is to get sheriffs nationally on the same page. They've been around for, gosh, I bet you 100 years now. So that's how that happened. They just happened to fall in D.C. this year. This summer, I think it's going to be in Oklahoma City.
Did a lot of sheriffs show up? There's a little over 3,000 sheriffs in America. I know there are some counties that don't have sheriffs. I know Connecticut lost their sheriffs. New York lost 5, 6, 7 sheriffs. You know, in other places too, but go ahead.
Yeah, people have no idea what they're giving up.
Yeah,
because what they're trying to do is when the states wanted to get bigger government, more centralized government, they wanted to get rid of their sheriffs and do their state police. And if people only understood that that just took their power away from them, and especially locally, they, I think, I don't know, some people like the bigger government. Mm-hmm. But
sheriff, no common law. That's the problem. That's the only law enforcer. Everyone else is a code enforcer.
Yes.
It's a major problem. Okay, let's see.
You look at the state of Delaware when you had Bo Biden, he was the attorney general there. And he come up with an attorney general's opinion basically saying that the sheriff had no arrest authority. I'm sitting here scratching my head as to how can you just do that with a stroke of a pen when sheriffs have been arresting people there since the time that guy by the name of George floated across there with the river with an army. You know, it's one of those just asinine, ridiculous opinions. And it's, where did that come from? Dude, you just told the people they don't have any arrest authority.
Well, they've been working at this for a long, long time. And, you know, all the people listening in on tonight's program and many of our members are regular, this makes the point on how important it is to get involved, how important it is to get going on your county committee of safety, exercising your right of government by consent. The book Government by Consent was written for that very purpose. And we have a course on our website also called Government by Consent. Extremely important, and we have handbooks on how to create a committee of safety and how to approach your sheriff. You can get all that is free for downloads underneath Start a Committee of Safety on a blue tab. So it's extremely important for everyone to get involved in this. Okay.
It shouldn't stop there either, because right now in Michigan, where the townships, our townships are constitutional offices. They're right in the state constitution. Our state legislature, which was taken over by some very communist Democrats, did a bill where they're making this committee that's appointed by the governor to determine how these power companies can set up all these solar grids in our townships. I say that, I keep telling these guys, no, you are a sovereign government. You are part of what Justice Scalia was talking about in the Mack Prinz case, when our government is divided up by sovereigns. He meant sovereign governments, and that meant townships, the cities, the counties, and all that stuff. And now you're sitting back, letting the governor take away your sovereignty and make a committee of bureaucrats to determine what you're going to do with your land and your township. They can't do that. They can only do that with state land. They cannot do that with all land all across the state. And it's getting back to that education and knowledge, your books. And we got attorneys out here who just don't understand that.
Right. Yeah, well, they're barred. That's why, and I don't know if you're familiar with the original 13th Amendment, and I think that was that came out in 1818. It was very early on. Our founding fathers, a lot of them were still alive at the time, of course. But the 13th Amendment prevented a bar attorney from holding an office of honor, period.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was hidden and lost as years went by. They'd done a lot of things. Okay, let's get back to these questions. What can you tell us about the Posse Comitatus and or the militia, or what would you like to tell us?
Well, we're doing a 12-week class on it right now with Brent Winters. And what I love about Brent is he'll take these words and he'll break them down and tell you this is a Germanic word, this is a French Germanic word, and this word comes from here and it's kind of mingled with this word here, and this is what it means. So, the posse comitatus is possibility, posse. And I forgot what he said the comitatus was in the Latin. It was, I can't remember what it is right now, but it basically meant power of the county. So you have a county entity, which is people, and it is their power in that county. And that's, again, I always like referring back to what Justice Scalia said in that Mack Prinz versus the United States case, divided up amongst sovereigns and branches of government. And so anyways, your posse comitatus is the power of the county, and that's your sheriff has the sole authority. He'd be your commander-in-chief of that. He can call on the posse to ferret all criminal activity in his community. It's basically the same people that you use in a militia. The governor oversees your militia, your sheriff oversees the posse. The governor is restricted by the Constitution what he or she can do with the militia. The sheriff is restricted only by ferreting out criminal activity. And like I'm starting up a task force right now on elections. And I'm doing that through my power with a posse. I'm really frustrated we didn't get a task force November 4th of 2020. There should have been a task force as FBI, state, county, and local police all looking at this stuff. But anyways, moving on. I'm sorry about chasing that rabbit. The militia, there's four clauses in the Constitution of the militia, and it explains what Congress's duty is, explains what a state's duty is, the president's, and then there's the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is for the people themselves. I don't have my notes all in front of me, but there's quite a bit to that when you start looking into it, start looking at the common law and the common practices and where that militia came from. Brent Allen Winters has a book, it's called The Militia of the Several States. And at the bottom it says, our Constitution's answer to its enemies. So if you get a chance, go look at that book. He gives an example of what a militia is, or a posse, and it had to do with a biker gang coming into a town and how they handled it. The more modern one I would like to point out to people is Flight 93. Flight 93, they were flying low enough where people were getting cell phone service and their loved ones are calling them and telling them, hey, they're going to fly your plane into a building. So they got in the back of the plane and they formed either, what you want to call it, a posse or a militia in the back. And what they do, they went over and took down the terrorists before they killed any more people. And that's one of the more modern examples of a posse getting together and ferreting out criminal activity. We had one similar here in Hastings where a guy who's been a problem, a thorn in our side for quite a few years, he firebombs one of the police cars, one of the cruisers. He takes off running. The assistant chief is chasing him. And there's some guys in a parking lot of this one business. They see him, so they go out and corner this guy, take him down for the police chief. There you go. You had just got an example of a posse. And I also laugh when I explain this. They didn't have to get a permit for it. So, there's not much of a difference on there except for the person who has the authority at that time. What is their role? The sheriff's role is a lot more broad than a governor or a president. Then we had the debate on when you get called out in a posse by the Congress and the president now is the commander-in-chief over the militia there. Are they under military law at that time? So that's something Brent threw out there. Brent thought they were. I didn't know the answer to that because I have a posse that I use for keeping the peace at basketball games, football games, the county fair. No, go ahead.
You had mentioned the handbook that Brent Allen Winters wrote. It was called The Militia of the Several States. We do have a link to that on our website, on the right-hand side of the website, for anybody interested in purchasing that. It's only a couple of dollars. And I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon also. Let me click on that link. Okay, he must have moved the page. I'll find the page where that goes to. Or you can just go to Brent's site, which is commonlawyer.com, and you can find this information. For instance, his books. I'll get a more direct link for this a little later on. But here it is. You can get the book right here. And you can also get his other book, Common Law, The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters. And again, anybody that really wants to know the history, he's done a great job on that. Okay.
John, do we still have the militia course based on Brent's book?
We do have I think, let me see what we do have on that. Hang on a second. Let's see, under here, County Militia, the Several States, we have the rules. No, he's got a course, I believe, on his website, and of course he's just doing one right now, and that'll be available also. So you'll find that information on his website. But we did get together. I got together with Brent a while back, and we put together rules for the several states. We went through this and put on information And so this is something that each county committee has to have resolutions for, and we have to have resolutions concerning the commissioner of the several states, particularly, of course, the people themselves. It's really focused in on that and working with their sheriffs. And in our handbook, we explain that, and we'll be adding some more information to the handbook. I do have some other things that we didn't cover that I will be getting back into, and I'll probably update the handbook or add another handbook for that purpose. But every county should go through the process of setting up resolutions. And again, once they're well organized, they got the sheriff on board, and they're working together, that's when they can come together and do this and put the resolutions together.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to cause a stir, John, do what I did. I put on there's a case, it's called Baltimore versus Silver. And in that case, there's the business owner, his last name was Silver, and he sued the city of Baltimore because back when the 60s riots happened, his business got destroyed. So he sued the city of Baltimore saying that, hey, they didn't protect my business. Of course, the city of Baltimore is going, hey, these were riots. There's nothing we could do. Maryland Supreme Court said, Baltimore, you had the power of the posse comitatus and you didn't use it. You're responsible for damages. And so I posted that on Facebook. And then I went on down and right towards the end, I said, the militia has more lawful character than the agencies that have been arresting them. I don't know how many news media was trying to call me to get a statement.
Good.
I said everything I got to say.
That's fantastic. Amen. Hey, I have a question for you. Do you understand when people say that the police, like you're talking about these police chiefs, the police only have the authority to do citizens' arrest, whereas it's finalized by the sheriff. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, that I don't know much about.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to learn more about it. It's interesting.
Yeah, John and Brent know something about it, but that's really all I can understand about it. But perhaps John could speak more on it now.
You know, first of all, the police departments, and they're put together by the city particularly, of course, there's also the state police, but there's city police, town police, village police, they are code enforcement officers, particularly. Of course, they enforce the law to some degree, of course, but...
Policy.
Excuse me?
I said policy enforcers, then.
Well, that's a good way to put it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but law enforcers, of course, is the sheriff themselves. And it is a fact that when an individual is arrested by the police department, they fill out their papers, they swear on it, but I never saw them notarized. I've seen plenty of papers sworn by police, but no notary, so it really isn't a true sworn statement. But it's enough to go through the process, and once they drop them off at the county jail, that's when the true arrest really takes place. Okay, but go ahead.
That's where the hue and cry would come in. And when somebody sees a felon there, and they're going to take him into custody, they shall make hue and cry and take him immediately to the sheriff. So I think that's where you guys are going with that. Because the first person a criminal answers to is the sheriff.
Exactly. And I heard Brent teaching on that just recently, so... Okay, I understand that you're connected somewhat with Sheriff Mack. I got quite a few questions concerning that particular group of people. Are you attending at this point the CSPOA meetings? And if you are, how often do they have them?
I believe about once a month. I was on the board. I'm not sure if I still am. I haven't gotten any emails. I don't think it's their fault. I think our county IT blocked them. And not on purpose, just because they're worried about that malware and the ransomware stuff.
Okay, so they meet once a month. Do you try to connect with them, or do you have a good relationship with them, Sheriff Mack?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. They got a conference coming up in April they want me to go to out in Vegas.
Okay. I got a couple of questions concerning them. Do you know if they understand and teach the common law, or is that something they're lacking still, generally speaking, for most of them anyway?
No, what they're trying to do is they're trying to teach the sheriffs that there's a pecking order, and it isn't the federal government on top. It's your local government. They're trying to get everybody to understand that we, the people, are in charge. And the way I put it is, like, here in Michigan, we had a lot of unions here. And I always say, guys, when you're in a union shop and you're a press operator and that light bulb goes out above your press, do you as a press operator change that bulb? And all the union guys laugh and say, oh, heck no. And I said, well, why not? Because that's electricians or a maintenance job. Well, why don't you do it? Well, you'd get written up. I said, but why? They said, oh, because it's not our job. I said, exactly. That's how government is. And that's kind of what they try to get pushed through to the public, and especially police officers and peace officers, is that, you know, we have a job. And the job isn't going out arresting all the drunks or writing traffic citations. The job is about protecting people's rights, and that includes from your own government. So that's where I got most of my confidence when I started standing up to the mask mandates. That's where I got my education on that, hey, these big governments don't have that authority to go out and demand these people to put these masks on or demand you get a vax or shut down businesses and all that. They didn't have that authority to begin with. And Mac got on this kick because of the Brady Bill. And back in 1992, the Clinton administration pushed in that anti-gun Brady Bill. And in that Brady Bill, they were trying to commandeer the office of the sheriff and make us do the dirty work for the federal government. So he piped on up. Their state sheriff's association said, I'm not doing it. They don't have the authority to do it. Well, the DOJ attorney that was presenting it to him said, well, then you will be arrested. So he filed a suit right off the bat. On that suit, he filed basically a stay that he's not going to get arrested while the battle goes on. And there were seven sheriffs out of 3,087 sheriffs that actually stood up and filed the suit. So that's what got him angry and started the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association, because he was so frustrated these sheriffs did not stand up.
Hey, Dar, he won that suit, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, yes. And it was 5-4 decision, which meant that there were four justices that can't read. Sorry. It just floors me that four would agree to the Clintons on that.
Well, there is certainly, I'm sure most people are realizing this by now, that there is a conspiracy to destroy America, and they have destroyed our judicial process, our judicial system. It's a mess. And
yes, it is. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the big battle that National Liberty Alliance is fighting in the courts. And we put together the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury for that purpose. And we'll continue to remain seated until we deal with the problems of enemies, particularly domestic and specifically in the federal courts and all the way down. But it's the federal courts which is the worst, and it's the federal courts that we have to win this game. And if we win in the federal courts, and we will do that, we do believe that, once devolution plays out. But at that point, then the states will have to fall in line, because we can only fall into the federal court for cause every time they violate the Constitution, which we do now, by the way. Not that we have a lot of success, because the federal courts are not backing up the Constitution. So it's a moot point. Okay, I don't know. I got a lot of questions concerning what's going on.
Can I give a couple of examples of what we're going through with the courts?
Yeah,
go ahead. Just at a local level?
Sure.
Oh, okay. We had that plot against our governor here, and two of my guys in my county, I can't say my guys, two of the people in my county, got arrested for that plot. And the end of it was is they took it to a jury trial. A jury trial acquitted them. But the arrest warrant come out of one county, which I understood the arrest warrant coming out of that county, because that's supposedly where they were doing their plot to take the governor at her cottage on the lake there. But the search warrant come from another county about an hour and a half away that these guys had never been to. the state police, when they do these things, they're told that these judges have statewide jurisdiction. This is one of the problems I'm seeing, because judges do not have statewide jurisdiction. There was no statewide vote to put them there. And they come into my county and did this search warrant with that judge's signature on it. I'm livid about that. We also had another example where we have those tabulators for counting ballots. The search warrant on that tabulator come from another county, 3 hours away, and had no dog in the fight. They just did the report, went to a judge in their county, had it signed, and doing a search warrant in my county. I'm upset because our judges aren't stepping or putting their foot down and saying, no, you go through me, this is my county. They're not doing that. That's some of the stuff that we got going on in my county. Another, as we got circuit court, probate court, and district court. All three of them are elected to do those jobs. But they call themselves a unified court. Now we got our district court judge, who's not even a constitutional judge. He's a statutory judge. He's doing circuit court duties, handling all the criminal stuff. I bring that up every now and then. I get shut down. It bothers me that they talk about voter suppression, and here it is, folks. They're doing it to you. Our own courts are doing it to you. Am I out of line for...
No, you're spot on, and amen, and okay. May the good Lord bless and keep you, and please keep doing what you're doing.
Well, amen. Yeah,
I yield. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, here in New York, they unified the courts also, the entire state, and they unified all the courts, and I even saw some courts, at least here in my town and a few other places, where they actually took down the sign Justice Courts. You know, they changed the name to just the town court. It used to be the town justice court. And of course, there is no justice there. And that's where we got the idea to organize the grand juries that we've organized. We organized the grand jury in every state of this union, all 50. And they came together and we organized what's called Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So they'd be unified state grand juries and then Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. So collectively, across the entire nation, we put out the call from time to time to our membership when we come together in order to make a decision on a potential indictment, and we've done that on a few occasions already. We do have those indictments listed up on our website under the federal court cases on a blue bar on the right-hand side of the blue bar there. And so that's where we got the idea of that. We kind of copied what they were doing. But they didn't have, again, they do whatever they want to do, you know, just like going back to police, for instance, they don't really have, they have the power to do something because they have statutory power. And statutory power is under civil law, which brings us back to Roman law or Justinian law, and it all has its Babylonian law. So, but with that said, that's where they get their power and authority. But it's the sheriff that is under the law. So their powers is under civil law. The sheriff's power is under common law. And but again, a lot of these courts now that are making decisions and putting people in jail, especially when a judge makes a decision, they don't have that really have that power to put anyone in jail ultimately. They can incarcerate for a period of time to get them to a jury. Then a jury has to decide, and they have to go through the law. But people actually go to jail without even getting a grand jury indictment in town courts, village courts, city courts, all over this nation. And that's a major problem. People are ignorant to that. You see, knowledge is the key for us to really come to that point where we can have power and authority. We have to have knowledge first, and we have to have enough people. And we don't need a lot of people. Jefferson said we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. So we need a majority in every county. Starts off with maybe 5 or 6 people, build up to 20 or 30. And before you know it, if you follow the plan that we put together, you could literally have hundreds of people by the years out. And potentially over time, thousands. And that's what you want. But again, 20 or 30 people in every county, we take this nation back, we take our courts back, we take everything back. But it's up to the people to do this. Exercise your right of government by consent. That's the purpose, again, of the book. We have a lot of this, and we have a course online here that's free Well, actually, we ask people to be a premium member for that one, which, again, is $5 a month or more. And if you can't afford it, we'll get you in anyway. But they do whatever they want in the courts these days, and their day is coming where they're going to be held accountable. I don't see it too far off.
Okay. Does NLA want to help out with something?
Excuse me?
Does NLA want to help out with something? Because I was working on doing a letter up, sending it to all the county courts in the state of Michigan, mm-hmm. telling them that they're... I do not consent to them doing search warrants in my county. You have to go through my court here.
Well, yeah, if you want to talk about it, my number, John can give you my number, and we can talk and give you some thoughts and ideas on things.
You have a letter, Dar, that you've drafted?
I did one. I've got Carson Tucker. He's a common law attorney, kind of looking at it. I haven't heard anything back from him in a while, but he's been really busy with his stuff. He's also a JAG attorney, so he helps out a lot of the military veterans and active military people too.
Yeah, that's something we'd like to learn more about. I don't know much about the JAG, but I'm hearing a lot about it. And Gerard, I think you're looking into that, aren't you? The JAG.
Yeah. But if you get a letter that you draft that you're going to send, I'd like to see it because. I wouldn't be opposed to taking it to my local sheriff. I already have a relationship with him. So I think.
Why don't we help Sheriff Dar? Why don't we have the leadership get together? And you know, I have GR as well. I guarantee you, he's got some good input for this. So let's consider doing this.
Do you know GR? Sheriff Dar, do you know GR? GR?
No, I don't.
Okay. All right, go ahead. Finish up, Eric.
I was just going to say, let's help them. Let's have a leadership meeting about this. Let's look at this. It shouldn't be hard for us. I bet we've already got the references in much of our paperwork. So it would be simple for us to add something to this, I am sure. Plus, again, I can get something from GR, I'll bet. And then I do have some information for the JAG about you, John, but we can talk about that later, and I yield.
Okay. Yeah, Sheriff, John has my phone number. He's got my email address. He's got everything. He can share it with you. You can connect with me. You can send me a copy of the letter. I'll take a look at it, give you some thoughts. And I'd be very interested to get involved with that.
Okay.
Any help?
Thank you.
I mean, I can even talk to you about different ways and strategies to go in for getting a grand jury, how to take control of a grand jury. And I'm sure Brent has a lot to do. So anyway, give me a call on that.
You know, Dar, you said something to the effect that when they found out you were a constitutional sheriff, they didn't want you to go to that meeting, and a lot of sheriffs are afraid to say they're constitutional because they think they'll get voted out of office. I think that's because they don't have enough information, we the people. Maybe we could do a chart of how the sheriff can help you versus your federal agencies, and actually how the sheriff is a firewall between them when they get out of control, that the sheriff is the highest law. See, they don't like that business, the sheriff's the highest law enforcement official, by due to the fact that he's elected. Like your state police, they're a private police force for the governor. That's what they are. They listen to the governor and not the people. And if you got a problem with the state police, ultimately, it stops with the governor. And what's the chances of you getting to see your governor? You know, whereas the sheriff is going to talk to me because I'm a constituent, and he's looking for votes. He has to maintain the votes in his county, so he's answerable to the people in the county. And people don't realize that a lot of what's going on with the banks and the ABC agencies is against them. And really, their only recourse is if they have a constitutional sheriff that says you can't operate my county, and you can do that. And most of the stuff they're doing is unconstitutional to boot. You know, they're doing non-judicial foreclosures. Well, if it's non-judicial, the sheriff shouldn't allow it to happen. So if you're doing a foreclosure and it's non-judicial, now they've just sucked the sheriff into breaking the law. See, sheriffs need to be educated to say, no, we're not going to participate in that. Just like you're saying, they're usurping the powers of your county by going around you, and it's the same thing. You know, a little different, but the same. So I think we need a campaign to educate people, a compare and contrast or something. I don't know.
Again, there it is, the importance of people getting the Committee of Safety going in their counties, getting a relationship with the sheriff. The sheriff needs the people need the sheriff, and sheriff needs other sheriffs to work with so that they can, you know, combine their force when necessary to prevent these out-of-control bureaucrats from trying to do something that they shouldn't be doing. You know, and again, people, you know, they're trying to get rid of the sheriffs. They've been trying to get rid of the sheriffs for a long time. They also tried to get rid of the juries, the grand juries, even the trial juries. I think it was 1938 where there was a big movement here in New York to get rid of the grand jury. But it backfired on them by God's mercy. And as a matter of fact, there was an addition added to because of this, to the New York State Constitution, stating that the grand jury will never, ever be, and also the right of, another thing they were trying to get rid of was, goodness, what was that called? Well, I can't think of it. But anyway, it was written in our Constitution now that it would never be done away with. I forget the exact words and how that was.
Well, the office of sheriff is a constitutional office. Some of these states, they just put it out to a vote to get rid of the sheriff. You can't do that. It's not up for a vote. That's like saying we're going to vote that we don't have a president. Right?
Yeah, it's a common law thing. It's not a constitutional thing. The only thing in the Constitution that brings in the power of the sheriff is the two processes of law, equity and law. And even equity has to be under the common law. In other words, it has to be built with maxims, common sense, ultimately. And anything that's repugnant to the common law, common sense, is null and void. But as far as that's the only thing, is the fact that law is mentioned in equity. Equity is legislative law that's under the common law. And, of course, law itself is the common law. No statute, no regulations, no code.
Can I interject here?
Yeah, yep.
The way I explain it to the public is that there's three executives who are your chief law enforcement officers. You have, I'm going to go in reverse order. You got your president, who is commander-in-chief of the United States military. He's also chief executive. You have your governor, who would be the commander-in-chief of the militias when they call him into service. Then you have your sheriff, who is the commander-in-chief of the posse at the county level. So those are all three executive offices. So they really can't get rid of them, because they're there, they have a very strict purpose, and the Second Amendment is the only time the word necessary is used in the Constitution or any of the Bill of Rights. So that's how important that was to be able to keep that structure going. If you take out that sheriff, you take out that the posse portion of it, which would be formed the posse comitatus. So I don't know how Connecticut gets away with it, or Delaware.
Well, they did it. They did it. That's how they did it. They had a referendum run, and of course that was unlawful. It's an impossibility. If you get rid of the sheriff, you get rid of the law, and that's what they want anyway. That's what they're working on. They created us. They moved us into a democracy that started a long, long time ago, and it took a couple hundred years to really get it solidified. And many people think we're a democracy when in fact we're a natural law republic. We're the only natural law republic in the world. I mean, there are hundreds of republics, but we're the only natural law republic, and that's an important point to realize. But yeah, it's so tied in. It's even tied in with our structure, because it's tied into the county, and it goes back into history. It goes back to England. It came into the colonies, and remained with us right through the creation of the United States of America.
No, I did not.
With us still today. So you can't get rid of it. It's an impossibility. But and we're working on that, by the way. We are planning to go into Connecticut and sue them for that. We've spoken to people in Connecticut about that, and hopefully we'll get a lot of people behind us with that. And they got eight counties, so they lost eight sheriffs. You know, here in New York, we lost them in New York City, which is five counties, and we lost them in Westchester County, And then we lost them also in Nassau County. And I don't know too much about how that happened.
I can hear you.
We're going to be looking. Let's get back to these questions. Let's see where we're at. Here's a question here. Would you have the time to work with Brent, and I'm sure he would agree with this, I'll have to speak with him about it, and National Liberty Alliance, to develop a free course for sheriffs, specifically for sheriffs and deputies, that teach the law of the land and the duties of the sheriff and his deputies? This way you get a constitutional sheriff, not only can he take the course and we'll set it up for free, but also all of his deputies would take the course. Any deputy they would send would get into the course. And we open it up to the people, too. NLA is already able to record and monitor such a course where sheriffs can receive an automated email when the deputies register and complete the course. Would you support NLA in sponsoring such a course? And or would you prefer that the National Sheriff Organization takes on the responsibility of monitoring that course and setting up the structure? So, you know, with us, all our courses, anybody who takes our course, we get reports on the people that have taken the course. The courses, we can tell when they came in, how far they've advanced on the course, when they finished the course, and some people will ask for a certificate, and we'll give them a certificate. But anyway, would you be interested in doing something like that? I'll talk with Brent about that to see, and you know, but we have to put it together somewhere and somehow, so that it will be open to all sheriffs and deputies across the nation.
Oh, absolutely. I think we should include prosecutors in that too.
Well, the problem with prosecutors is they're bar attorneys, and we are going to be moving into the courts to require the original 13th Amendment to be it doesn't have to be brought back into being. It's still there. They just kind of darkened it.
Reinforced.
They just removed it. So we need to get it back. But the 13th Amendment does not permit anybody from a bar to be able to hold an office. And prosecutors also do not have the power or the authority to go in and talk with the grand jury. That's only the job of the sheriff and the coroner. They're the ones that's supposed to be called. Plus the sheriff can have the deputies do it, whatever. But the point is that there has to be law enforcers. And that's the key point to this whole thing. Prosecutors, they abuse the powers. We see what they've done and what they continue to do. More often than not, they'll arrest somebody. They'll put a lot of stress on the person and tell them, hey, look, you faced 20 years. Let's make a deal. We'll give you 3. Just plead guilty. That's extortion.
Yes.
Okay? We can't permit that. People need to take their concerns of if someone committed a crime, if a prosecutor comes aware of a crime, it's their job to bring it to the sheriff, and the sheriff has to consider whether he wants to bring it to the grand jury or not. That's the way it's been for a long, long time, and that's the history of the sheriff. So we need to get back to that. That's an extremely important thing. Also, you know, we got so many people in jail. Many things does not require jail time. They put everyone in jail for almost anything. That's what they're trying to do to Trump.
I had that lecture with one of my sergeants and one of my deputies a while back. We're talking a while back, as in like the last 2-3 weeks. And what had happened is one of our local farmers, his wife hit a deer with her truck and totaled it. So she's driving his truck. He's got his field truck that he drives around the field for his crops and cattle and all that. So he had to go in and get some checks cashed or maybe taking checks to the bank or something like that, but he had to go to the bank. So he hopped in his field truck, forgot that his license plate tabs were expired, and he has a couple guns in the back because he used those for taking out woodchucks and like to get an injured deer or something back there on the property. And lo and behold, he gets pulled over. The police officer asks him if he had any guns in the car. He said yes, so he confiscates the guns, goes the complaint warrant route to the... Anyways, does a report, sends a report and a warrant request to the prosecutor. This is in October. Prosecutor didn't authorize until middle of December. He didn't get arrested until almost March. So there's almost a six-month span there. They jammed him up with a bunch of felonies. So I was pretty upset over that. And I looked at my guys and said, you understand, enforcing the law does not necessarily mean you arrest somebody. They kind of looked at me kind of funny. I said, I ask you guys to make good decisions out there. I don't care about stats. Stats are, to me, is an enemy of law enforcement. An enemy to the public anyways, because you want to get your stats up. You're going to make stupid decisions out there. I want to make good decisions. I said, so what would be wrong if you told that farmer, all right, the law says you can't have these guns in your truck, take them home, then you come back into town. What's wrong with doing that rather than jamming up with felonies? Did you take an enforcement action at that time? And it took him probably half minute to a minute to all of a sudden the lights on. Oh, that is enforcement action. I go, yes. That's no different than when you were in kindergarten. You took your crayons and the teacher said you wanted your pencils, so she made you take your crayons back and get your pencils back. You know, she didn't send you down to the principal's office. And so I'm starting to get that through my guys, that the decision-making out there doesn't mean you arrest every drunk you come across, write everybody a traffic citation. You don't have to arrest everybody who commits a crime. Sometimes the enforcement action is correcting them and then letting them move on with their life. I was going somewhere with that, sorry. But anyways, that's how we've been trying to get the being a peace officer rather than the police officer mentality out there.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key. Okay, you know what we'll do here now is any of the national leadership, your mics are all open. Do you have any questions for Sheriff Darr? And maybe we'll open up to the rest of the room. People have some questions. In fact, let me do that right now, open up to Q&A.
Well, I have...
Right, anybody wants you to ask...
Actually, I have two.
...six and a one. If you're on a phone and if you're on an app, you should be able to hit a button. But go ahead, Terry. You had a question?
Yeah, I have two. One short one. Darr, do you remember Robert Overhill? We started hearing about you from Robert Overhill, and I just wanted to bring up his name. Do you remember him?
Make sure that he's unmuted.
He must have got muted.
Yeah, because it's Q&A, so you'll have to unmute him. See if we can find him.
I'm looking.
He's down by the S's, I think.
Yeah.
Way down.
Let me get down there myself. Okay, there he is. I got him.
Okay.
Unmuted. We apologize. When I flipped the button, everybody went mute again. But go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yes, I miss that man, Robert Overhill. He would come into my office, and he'd have paperwork and a bag, and he's walking with these two canes. And it was humbling that a man cared that much about his country and his rights, that he was walking in my office with two canes and holding his books and would not take help. So, I do miss that man. He was supposed to help me out because I was looking at doing the... what do you call that? The allodial title on your property?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yes. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Yes. He's going to help me do that because I was real curious about it. And I figured, you know, if I go through the process, then kind of a hands-on learner type thing here, I'd understand it better. But he ended up dying before then.
And let me tell you what, Robert was the best guy to do it too, because we've had other people do allodial titles that don't really understand them. Robert knew them inside and out, and he did them right.
Okay, the second question is, it has a statement and a question. When there is community involvement and the sheriff finds out he has support of the people, he will do more when we take out corporations and unions that will help. What do you think is the largest factor in getting the sheriff in the common law camp and attending committees of safety meetings?
Well, first of all, you have to invite him. you're going to have a hard time getting a sheriff because usually they're older and they want that 9-to-5 job.
and I should say 8 to 5. So sometimes it's hard getting these guys to even do a talk show with you guys at this hour. And because, you know, I got people in my house here trying to sleep and everything. But, I think I look at it as an honor to be here. We have to get through somehow that conveyor belt training that law enforcement gets and start educating them that, hey, the common law is supposed to be the rule, not the canon law. Boy, you guys ask these questions and they're so hard because every sheriff's a little bit different. I have a heck of a time getting sheriffs that want to even jump on board with this election fraud investigation, even though there's so much there. And I can't get into the evidence and all that, but I'm just giving this as an example. I had one who has a company, it's a software company, in his own county, and there's piles of evidence that they were fraudulent. And he says, I don't have time to put money into that, or the money to put into that. So that's what I come across quite a bit. So if you, I keep telling the sheriffs, people will follow courage. If you stand up for them, they will die for you. So that's what I have here in Berry County. I've got so many people that have my back. When I get started getting peppered in the newspaper or on Facebook or something like that, so many people come on in, and I bet you it's 10 to 1. I'm blessed in my county.
Well, therein is the important part of this whole thing, backing up your sheriff, having a relationship with your sheriff. And we do have a plan on approaching the sheriff. We have in our handbook, this is the County Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook, which is free download on National Liberty Alliance here. It's right underneath the Starter Committee of Safety, come down to handbooks, videos, and tools. And you come to this book, it's CC, how's it put, CC? COS Organizing, which is the Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. And we do have a couple of pages of information on how to approach the sheriff. People can read that and take a look at that. Once you get enough people, remember, you know, the sheriff needs the support of the people. He needs to be elected. So it's a two-way street for us here. We'll support the sheriff as long as he's going to be constitutional. And the key is if once you go through the process that we teach in order to approach the sheriff and educate the sheriff and have your first short meeting and then your long meeting at a later time after he's a little educated, their books and so on. And if he's not the right guy for you, then the next election you'll look for another one. If you're powerful enough and strong enough because he's an unconstitutional sheriff, you can do a recall. We also teach people how to do a recall. We teach the committees, the safety, how to do recalls. But you have to have enough people involved in your county to do that. If you have 20 or 30 people, it's a slam dunk to do a recall. And we can teach you that, and you can get a guy there that is constitutional. So, but anyway, any other questions from anybody or Sheriff Dar in the leadership here? And if not, we'll go over to the Q&A.
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Q&A. Okay, Marianne, it looks like you're the first person in the queue. Let's click the button here. Keep an eye on Sheriff Dar, because when I click this button, he may become muted. And keep him unmuted, Terry, please, or Eric.
Will do.
Okay, Marianne, you're unmuted. Go right ahead.
And Sheriff. You can hear me. Thank you very much, Sheriff Dar, for being an amazing sheriff for the people there in your county, encouraging the rest of us. And also, mention that there was a conference, the winter conference, where Director Ray basically said that the elections are being hacked and they're being hacked even at the local level. Is that recorded anywhere? Can I find that on YouTube or Rumble or something?
No, what you can find is look up Sheriff Jones, Butler County, Ohio.
Yeah,
and you'll get his press release. But no, they do not record those.
we played his video. I do believe we have it up on the website.
I was disappointed, too, that they didn't record them, because I wanted to hear it right from the horse's mouth, because we've been looking at this election stuff for quite a while, and he's admitting that there's hacking coming in from foreign countries, and they're telling everybody this is the most secure election we've ever had.
Yeah, it's really obvious, and it's really disgusting, and there was that executive order, was it 13848, is it, about foreign interference in elections, and it was pretty obvious, so I'm hoping that some things are happening in the background in regards to that, and I'm hoping and praying that we just get rid of election machines altogether.
It goes beyond that. Yeah, qualified voter files, all that stuff. It's got to go back to local control, period.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hand counting by the people live right after the election. You see, one of the problems that they do have in counting the votes is they collect it across all the towns, the villages, and so on, send it up to the county, and then they count it up there, even though it's recorded in the machines. But they do the final counting up on the county level. And that's the problem, and that's where they're cheating. But each election district should count them, and that shouldn't take too long at all, and because it's limited a number of people in each election district. And the committee man is really responsible for overseeing that. That's the way it should be. And the committee man is the committee, the County Committee of Safety. That's the true committee man. Okay, we're going to go to the next person. We got a lot of people asking questions, so we're only going to permit one question per person. Is there a follow-up on what you're talking about, Mary?
Well, it did have to do with election machines and how we could get rid of them at the local level. I'm trying to pull in contracts and see and challenge people about the software and... I'm looking at election machines here, but they don't show what the tabulators are. Like, I'm wondering where's the tabulators, and then they're trying to say that it's not that they have different voting locations where anybody can vote anywhere at different jurisdictions in here, my county, in Jasper County, in Indiana, and yet they're trying to say, oh, it's not online. I'm like, oh, how could it not be online if you are able to go to any voting location and vote? And it has to be able to access your voting data, which means that it's connected somewhere. You know, it's wireless somewhere. So it's very frustrating here because there's no voice of the customer being done on any of these things. And I'm working on it here as much as I can. But it's already 2024, and I don't know.
Yeah, there is a plan in the background, and. You know, there are three news places that I get my news from, and it answers a lot of these questions and deals with a lot of the problems and is very, very informative, and that's X22 Report, also Christian Patriot News, and Q News Patriot also. You can find these three links under our welcome page. You come down to up-to-date news, and if anybody has any other source of news that's really good. I mean, there's a lot of news out there. There's a lot of podcasting, a lot of things going on. But this is regular news that these people come out with that's kind of behind-the-scenes information. And there is definitely a plan in place to deal with the voter fraud and the machines being attacked and all that other stuff. So,
John, first of all, voter fraud's been around ever since we voted. And you go look at what was his name? It's one of them that was at the Alamo there.
The Alamo?
I might be ahead of myself there.
Crockett's
there? No. It was right around that time. It was Daniel Boone. It wasn't Daniel Boone. It was But anyways. He lost an election where the banks were actually paying people to come in and vote. And then they started using the immigrants to vote and so on. And they were paying the immigrants to vote for it if they had voted a certain way. That's why we have secret ballots. So it goes on and on. there was a video of a man who's working with EAC and according to this federal law, all these machines before he used them had to get certified, and they weren't certified. And he's the one that was in charge of certifying, and Congress went ahead and ignored his wants and just did the election anyway with these machines. So there's a lot going on with that. It's not just, you know, get rid of the machines. If you get a chance, if everybody write this down, it's called Let My People Go. It's a documentary by Professor David Clements. It's a Clements with a T and S at the end. It's probably the most accurate documentary I've ever seen on voting, on the problems with it. So Let My People Go. It's a long video, but it's worth it. He opens the door on a lot of things that are wrong with our elections. And then he gets into the J6ers.
So this is a video you're talking about, Sheriff?
Yes, yes.
You find it on YouTube or Rumble or something?
Rumble. You're not going to get it on YouTube. It's the most censored video in the world right now.
All right, we'll find that video. We'll post it up on our website also. So, yeah, voting fraud has been going on for quite some time, but what the people need to understand, okay, we can vote in all the criminals, and right now that's we have a lot of criminals that have been voted in. They're all on the take. But we can vote them all in and control them if people were involved. If people were exercising their right of government by consent, and you do that by creating committee of safety, dealing with the political process, dealing with the judicial process, the political process without the politics, because we're not a democracy, we're a republic. There's nothing to discuss here. They're there to just do the job that we told them to do. We've given them the powers and the authorities. It's listed out clearly in the Constitution. Anything beyond that, they have no business dealing with. And when they do, we just remove them from power. But the people have to be watching. They have to know who their representatives are. At every level, whether it's on the state level or the county level, the town level, the city level, or even the federal level. And once you were watching them, the Committee of Safety, the political committee is watching those individuals and saying, hey, you're breaking your oath here. Stop or we're going to remove you from power. They will comply. And that's the key. That's the power of the people. But we're far from that at this point until we start to develop enough committees of safety across the nation to actually do that. And that's what we need to do. Okay, let's move on to the next person. Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to, there's someone on 305 area code. What's your first name and your state?
Hi, this is Mike. The phone number might say Howard Van Skoik. I'm using my father's phone. But this is Michael Van Skoik, a.k.a. Mike Singer, from thebigvirushoax.com and righteousarmy.org. First of all, hello to Dar, and congrats. Haven't spoken to you for a while, if you recall. We had a couple conversations a year ago. And I just want to share a little bit of information and get Dar's feedback on it, because it seems to me that something that's vital, as much great work as you all are doing, one thing that doesn't seem to be brought up or brought up enough is the fact that we're talking about the government as if it's legitimate and, you know, we just have to, you know, get we the people to start taking back our government. What's missing in this is that, and it needs to be emphasized, people need to understand that the Supreme Court of the United States of America has ruled that if governments are going to act as corporations, then they are held to the same standards and rules that govern a corporation, and they have no lawful authority, power, or jurisdiction over a living man or woman. And in fact, the government has become incorporated. The federal government is incorporated. The states are incorporated. The counties are incorporated. They are fictitious. They are not our government. So this, even this voter fraud thing is a distraction. It's a red herring. When you vote for Trump or you vote for Biden, you're voting for a president of a corporation. You're not voting for the president of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America. This is missing in the conversation, and it's a vital reality.
I'd like to offer a correction for that. And do you have a question for Sheriff Dar? But before you ask your question, Trump is really the first legal or lawful president in quite some time. He is not the president of the corporation. He's the president of the United States of America. And there's a lot of information, and there's a lot of proof to that. As a matter of fact, you'll find that proof on these three different news sources put out here on the website. But anyway, do you have a question for the sheriff?
Well, in response to what you said, 28 U.S. Code, Section 3002, Subsection 15A will tell you succinctly the United States is a federal corporation. And at least superficially, we do know. I'm fully aware of the whole Q movement, Q PSYOP. I'm totally aware of it. The point is that the people understand the United States as if it's their nation when it's a corporation. And, yeah. You know, as far as the thing about Trump behind the scenes is actually, you know, the 16th president, not the 49th and all that, that's more actual distraction. But what I wanted to ask Dar to elaborate on is that reality, because in fact the federal government, all the federal agencies, the state agencies, the corporations actually have and now the name's evading me, but the number you get that's registered when you are a corporation, the if anybody wants to help me out, it's just evading my name. Dun and Bradstreet, that's right. They all have a Dun and Bradstreet number, and they are corporations. So the point...
Okay, hold on.
...that's being done...
Hold on 1 minute. You know, we do appreciate what you're saying. We do understand. We do agree to a certain extent. But here's the problem. You know, we've been born into really slavery to some degree, and it goes back quite some time. You know, we all have birth certificates, we all have Social Security numbers, we can't live without them. We have driver's license, we have permits to carry weapons, the whole process, we have no choice, we're stuck in the situation. Well, the same situation takes place also with electing a president or anyone to office. You know, the structure of the United States of America is still there. The republic, we're a republic. The only difference is that it's been taken over by criminals, a criminal syndicate, and they have put all these all this legislation together to create the statutory prison that they've placed us into. But it can take we could use the same process to come to power and take control. You could do the same thing in the courts. We're working on the courts. Some people say you can't go into those courts because they're all corrupt and they're commercial courts. They have nothing to do with justice. Well, they're right from the standpoint that they've seized control of it, but they're still there. And we built those buildings. We pay for the people who work in those buildings. We pay for their computers, the electricity, everything that takes place. We pay for the execution of law. We pay for all of these people that are in power, all the bureaucrats, whatever position they might be holding. We pay for all of it. Now, they seized control of it. That's a fraud. We're taking it back. There is a movement going. There's a lot of people involved. Trump is part of that movement. So we will be taking it back. But, Sheriff, if you want to respond to any of that, go right ahead.
Well, we didn't lose it overnight either. This has been going on. This has been little bits and pieces. And the ink wasn't even dry on the Constitution when the banks were trying to take over. So, yeah, this is nothing new. It's just it's constant maintenance. And we got lazy. And we've been lazy for 100 years. We've always been able to take our kids out to football games and soccer games, and you still have the homecoming king and queen, and so everything seems normal for everybody, but they have no idea about what you're talking about. And government, they might not have the authority, but they've got the force to force it upon us. They got the power. They got the gun, basically, is what I'm referring to. They got the judges and the attorneys that would not hesitate to lock you up if you don't go along. And that's what we're facing. It's something that we're not going to be able to take back in a year or two. It's going to be a long, tedious task. And a lot of it has to do with getting people back in the know of what government, the proper role of government is.
Okay, appreciate that. And, you know, only the people can save America, and that's the key. You know, we have the power to do it. We do it from the grassroots level. It's the only way that can be done. You have to be free and independent. you know, committees of safety. National Liberty Alliance is here for the sole purpose to provide a venue, to provide an education, to provide organizing, assistance in organizing, and for the communications between the committees of safety, not only county to county, but also state to state. And that's the only way that America is going to be saved. There is no other way. There's no other way. You know, we will find that we will be giving back our nation by the years out. There's no doubt about that from my perspective. Many people may not believe that, but that's okay. We'll see what happens when we get there. But the bottom line is, can the people keep it? There was a question that was asked to Franklin, Benjamin Franklin, you know, what kind of a government do we have? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. And that's the key. We have a republic. Can you keep it? You see, if people expect to be ignorant and free, as Thomas Jefferson said, people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. It's not possible. You can't have liberty. You can't have the law. You can't have the government, the control of the government, or anything unless you're involved. Liberty is not free. Freedom is not free. Okay, with that, we'll take our next person. Looks like Mike, maybe. Hang on a second. There goes Mike. You got the mic. What state are you from, Mike?
Hey, John. Minnesota. I'm from Minnesota. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead, Mike.
Okay. Yep. Hey, Sheriff Dare. As far as, you know, the sheriff power, let's say in a county, and you have a court that's corrupt, and where you are actually the officer that can arrest the judge. Am I correct with that?
Oh, that's part of it. Surely through Winters, he says you cannot, even at the common law, arrest a judge while he's on the bench. And then I asked him this question. I said, and then what? You get the arrest, and where do you go? That's because nobody's been trained in it for, what, 100 years?
See, that would be a shock to the court system that way, you know, because they – but the sheriff does have that power. Because in Minnesota here, you know, in Ramsey County is – you know, the governor is going crazy here against the people. And so they took the sheriff out of the county. Well, now that power is gone. So now the people can't fight back. You know, now you got gangs in the cities, and it's horrible. So, yeah, but they
got gangs in the city because they're not using that posse comitatus, and the people need to step on up and handle that themselves. They can't sit back and let government do everything for them.
Right. But I mean, they're bringing in, you know, illegals into Minneapolis. It's horrible. You know, it's not good.
The sheriff will receive that power if the people give it to them.
And the
only
way
to give it to them is if they get behind him. And the only way you can get behind him is by getting involved and taking control of our political process and our judicial process and bring back the law and take these people out of power when they break their oaths and work with the sheriff. And that's when the sheriff will have the ability to arrest a judge or anyone else. So that's it gets back to the people. We are part of the problem, but we can become the solution. You know, people, I watch a lot of people, I listen to a lot of people, and see a lot of people going to different meetings and listening to this one and that one and talking about this, and they got a lot of negative news, but there's very little positive news. But then when they finish off complaining and everything, then they just go home, and that's it for the day. That's not getting government back. That's not taking control. That's not being able to have government by consent. That's not empowering your sheriff or the good people that are in power that are executing their authority righteously. We have to back those people. And again, if we just go home and don't do anything about it and we just complain, that we're not going to get anywhere. So it's time for all of us to get up. We are the problem. I speak for myself first, but I'm educating myself, and I'm doing something. And there are a lot of people I know at L.A. and other different places. People are doing a lot of things in a lot of different organizations. And whatever it is, they're doing.
The people I talk with around me, you know, I talk about militia. That's openly for me because that's part of everything. You know, we're the backup to the sheriff. That's what our job is, you know.
Right. We have to be organized correctly. We have to do it lawfully. We have to
put together resolutions.
We have to sheriff, and then we have to do it lawfully, and then we're empowered, and the sheriff is empowered.
Right.
We got to take our next person. So we're running out of time. We only got about another. What time is it, by the way? It looks like it's 11 o'clock.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Okay, we're going to cut off in the middle or two. We'll just take one or two more questions.
Let me add to that militia thing.
Yeah.
When you talk about organizing it correctly, and the reason is that you start running into this, my militia is bigger than your militia thing, and then you're going to have a real big problem after that.
Right. No, I mean, it has to be where it's unionized together, where you have, you know, all branches agreeing at the same time for the same, where they want to go. That's the only way, you know, but that would be tough.
Okay, thanks for the question, Mike. Let's take our last caller on this. I'm sorry, there's a lot of people in the queue, and maybe another day, I'll come back and we'll talk some more, but we'll take at least one more caller. Mike from Michigan, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello, Dar. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
I just spoke to you about a couple of days ago, and I attended the meetings out there in your lovely little town of Hastings. And I just have one response here, Dar. This, when the subject matter came up of the police departments, and you had kind of a jovial response to that. You say, well, yes, they're policy enforcers. So what's the policy? What's the policy enforcement? What crime was committed, and who's the victim? The policy?
Well, when you get charter in the cities and the townships and all that, you have to have some type of order, and that's where you got your policies. The word police itself spells policy, and it is a necessary function for a city to maintain order.
Well, I'm in complete agreement with that, but I was saying when you talk to your officers, you make the statement that make good decisions in the field. Do you arrest somebody for something that's not a crime? I guess that was my point, Dar.
Oh, no. It's got to be a crime, yeah.
Yeah, Okay, so that's basically good with.
I think I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Are you going to be coming back to the meeting?
Well, I probably should wiggle my way back over there. I heard you had a good last gathering.
Last two?
Yeah, I heard it was up to 35 or something like that.
Oh, yeah. But then I had to leave early because I had a baby on the way, so.
Oh, yeah. That's a good reason to leave. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Dar.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for your question, Michael. Okay. Appreciate having Sheriff Dar. Thanks for coming. And maybe sometime in the near future, you can come back and talk to us some more. We'll have some more questions for you, I'm sure. And again, if you can use our help with paper writing or anything, just get in touch with me. John has all my information if you don't. Next week, I think we're going to focus in on traffic violations or code violations and what you can do and how to handle it in court. And, you know, town courts, village courts, and both city courts. Some city courts are courts of record, but most of them are not. I know here in New York, only the New York City courts are courts of record. So they can handle different kinds of situations where people might go to jail. But town courts really can't put you in jail. They're nisi prius courts. They don't have that power of authority. So particularly we're going to share something next week on traffic violations particularly, but you can couch this paper in any way for any kind of a code violation. So if it's a criminal thing, you have to go into a state court for that purpose. A county court can also deal with it, depending on your constitution. Here in New York, county courts are courts of record. I would presume all county courts are, but I'm not sure on that. Okay, with that, we want to thank everyone for coming, and Lord willing, we'll see you back next week. And again, thanks, Dar. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for having me on.